To the Senate Education and Workforce Committee, Part 2. This is 6 o'clock p.m. We're a little after 6. We are going to switch the order on our two bills today. We're going to start out with Senate Bill 515. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 515 and call up Representative Hass and whoever you want to bring up with you at this time.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 515 directs the Department of Ed to award grants to districts and public charter schools to provide AEDs. Those are automated external defibrillators in public school facilities. This declares an emergency. It's effective July 1st, 2005. However, the Dash 1 amendment is in your packet that was given to us by Senator Bates' office. And it tries to clarify that the program is permissive and requires the Department of Ed to use available resources to seek those federal grant funds for the purpose of the grant program. I had a brief conversation with Legislative Fiscal on Friday when I received this, and although Legislative Fiscal has not seen this amendment, they have suggested that although they won't be able to quantify what the fiscal impact of the measure is, they'll probably issue a statement that the amendment that's proposed in the Dash 1 amendment merely transfers responsibility within the Department of Education.
Okay. All right, Representative Hass, you have a guest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark Hass from House District 27. Thank you for hearing this bill, and I know it's been a long day for you. I wish we were here on a less somber occasion. You've heard about some of the parameters of this bill and what the goal is. Before we get too far along, though, I would like to introduce to you Tina Johnson, who's lost a son last month. And I would just like for a moment for us to hear her story and why there is this need for these devices to be placed in schools.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. If you could state your name for us, please.
My name is Christine Johnson. On February 23rd, 2005, my son died at Madison High School. He was competing in a basketball game there, and he came to the bench in a regular sub situation. He substituted out, and he sat down, and he waved at me. I always called to him and let him know I'm there at the game, and he waved to me. And about 5 minutes later, somebody hit me and pointed to him, and he was going down on the floor, sliding out of his seat. And at first we thought it was a seizure, and he was going into convulsions, and he died from what's called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which we've known he had for about the past 4 years, but he had been cleared to play medically. Eddie was a good athlete. He was a good person, and I don't know if you guys seen the news articles and different things that they did on him, but I mean, just the testimony to his character. We had to hold his memorial at the University of Portland Child Center because it was more than 1,500 people there. So he touched a lot of lives, and of course he touched mine more than probably anybody, our family. And until that day, I mean, I was happy. And he was really my best friend and my only son. And I really believe in my heart that if there had been a defibrillator there, he could have been saved. Because he was there on the ground for, it seemed like forever, but probably 10 to 15 minutes before any kind of response. And nobody really responded to him but me, because everybody was in shock. So I'm screaming in the audience asking, is there any doctor in the house? And there was nobody. And from the little bit that I know, what they told me, his heart went out of rhythm. It was erratic rhythm. And I've been told that if you respond within a certain amount of time, you can shock the heart back into rhythm. And it was too much time in between medical personnel showing up. I'm surprised that this, you know, I was asked to come and speak here because last week, after I got myself together, my first thought is I need to write some legislators. I need to do something about this because this is not right. It's not, I mean, I hear they start at like $1,000, and to me, my son's life is priceless. So I just can't understand why it wouldn't be mandatory. I don't know what else to say. It's just a big loss, and it's not worth not having them in school to lose, you know, and it's happening more often than people think. So I don't know what else I can say. It's the biggest loss I ever had in my life, and I feel like now I will always try to figure out if that had been there, if he would be with me, and I wouldn't be sitting here.
Ms. Johnson, first of all, let me, on behalf of the committee and the legislature, all of us express our loss over our deep regret over the loss of your son. I can't even begin to tell you that I can relate to that. And I'm very sorry that it happened. Let me ask you this question, because you indicated that he went 10 or 15 minutes before help arrived. Was anyone there to provide CPR?
Nobody did. I think a nurse was in the crowd, and she said she wouldn't administer it because he had a pulse and he was still breathing. But my feeling was, even for myself, I know CPR and first aid. If, you know, I thought maybe if I did compressions without the breaths, or, you know, I don't know. But I was freaking out, so I don't think I could have been of any help because I was too busy freaking out. But mm-hmm. Nobody came. I mean, I stood there and screamed, and everybody was in shock. And I couldn't understand, even as an athletic director, somebody, I mean, coming to, I felt like I was standing there alone for a long period of time, just calling his name and asking him what's wrong.
It probably seemed like an eternity to you.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I would say, and we'll talk about the bill in a minute, but I would just say to you, and I'm not a psychologist trained in that area at all, but I wouldn't second guess what could be, because your son's not here, and that is a very sad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're here helping others,
mm-hmm.
and that's a very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I don't think this legislation was introduced. I think it was introduced before this ever happened to your son, was it not, Representative Hass? So it was sort of like a miracle that this legislation was here waiting for you to be proactive. And I did see the news reports, and you're right, your son was very well loved and touched many, many lives. So you can be very proud of that,
oh, yeah.
As his mother. Thank you. Do any of the committee have any questions? Well, Ms. Johnson, again, thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it. Representative Hass, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I just wanted to personally say to Ms. Johnson how much it means to me that she come down here and make these comments. I'm a parent, too, and I share your same sensitivity, Madam Chair, that I could not even relate as a parent of a loss like that. Her tragedy that her family experienced is similar to others, and in fact the inspiration for this bill was a 7-year-old boy who drowned in a swimming pool in Beaverton. And believe it or not, he was attended by 2 lifeguards and 2 physicians, including a cardiac surgeon, and they could not revive him. The doctors said later that we didn't need 2 doctors, we needed 1 defibrillator. And so that's what inspired this bill. The goal here is to direct the Department of Education to go after some of the private money and the federal money that does exist. There are grant funds, currently at least 5 federal grants, emergency response and crisis management, homeland security, urban areas have an urban area security grant, rural areas have a special rural community facilities grant, and there are some private foundations through which ODA can apply for. The intent of the amendments was to make it sort of to buy off ODA's approval in that it doesn't give them more to do. They do have grant specialists, and the whole sort of underlying goal was to keep this without a fiscal. But I do believe it is a necessary first step in getting all of the steps necessary to put these AEDs in our schools and indeed in our public places. I think AEDs are the life-saving fire extinguishers of this century. They're not going to be used a lot, but when they're needed and when they're used, they can save lives. So I thank you for the consideration of this bill, and I believe we may have others.
We do have Senator Bates. Why don't you come and join these two at the table? And Senator Morissette has a question.
I'm very, very sorry for what happened in your loss. What about the EMTs? Did somebody call 911? Was there response time? They should have been there for the recommended response time in any city is 3 to 4 to 6 minutes. Ambulance, fire truck, police. We put them in police cars in Springfield. I think they're in Mack Court. In fact, we had a hearing in Senator Cruz's committee 2 years ago when defibrillators were talked about, and they're put in different places. I think it's long overdue, but I am curious about the response from the teams, because that's something else that may have to be looked at is response time.
Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the exact time because it was so much chaos, but it was... Yeah. It took a while before they got there.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Cruz?
Yeah, Senator Moore said it. I think it was 2 sessions ago. In fact, I sponsored the bill to put them in all state buildings. And doing some very rough math, it's a big dollar figure, but not necessarily a big dollar figure if you're looking at all school buildings. And I like the amendment because it does speak to that, but Senator, having an EMT there is not what's essential here. It's having the machine there and somebody that can operate it.
Yeah.
And it's an easy machine to learn to operate.
May I just ask?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the community. We have 5 fire, for instance, fire stations in Springfield. They're within 3 minutes in response time. There are some schools that do not, and I think that schools need to look at the response time of the EMTs with that. Now, I understand one in, I don't know where you'd put it in the school, it'd be locked in a room somewhere that people couldn't get it, but it's got to be available in a gym, I guess, would be the place for it. But it's more than just the defibrillators in the building. It's in combination with the services that are guaranteed to be there.
Well, I think this is a good segue into Senator Bates, who's our resident doctor, to talk to us a little bit about the value of these machines. If you could introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Alan Bates, State Senator, and I'm a family physician in Southern Oregon. I think you all know me pretty well. This bill has been in the legislator's hands now, your second session with it. And from my point of view, what it does is start to publicize the need for defibrillators in all public buildings, not just schools. You've already heard gripping testimony, and I share your sympathy for your loss. It's terrible. In my practice right now, I'm dealing with the grandparents who lost their 9-year-old daughter a granddaughter, I'm sorry, in a Denver school on a playground. She suddenly dropped and died because she went into what's called ventricular fibrillation, which is what these machines reverse. Basically, the bottom half of the heart, which is the major part of the heart that pumps, just suddenly starts to quiver under certain conditions, stops pumping blood. And you have a short time to get that heart started in the right direction. Most of the people who die from fibrillation have an underlying condition that is treatable. We are now even putting pacemakers into people who have chronic problems of this nature, and those pacemakers will actually defibrillate the heart. It's quite a jolt when it happens, but it keeps them alive. And many of them have cardiomyopathies or other problems that can be resolved. But most of the time, you don't know ahead of time that the patient has that problem. So you have a chance to save their lives with the defibrillation, and then at a later time, you can go in and correct the problem in the heart that caused it, and those people go on to normal lives. So defibrillators truly do save lives, and I think it's one of the points we have to keep in mind. I was a little surprised when I was elected and came up to this building, and Senator Cruz was with me when we did this. I found out we had no defibrillators in the state capitol. We have two now. We put them in the first session. And Senator Cruz went forward with getting those in all public buildings, which I think is a great step forward. And we basically put them on walls as you would fire extinguishers. You break the glass, you pull them out, and away you go. And that's the way they are in this building. Admittedly, they're a little expensive, but when you consider the cost of most of the buildings we're talking about putting them in, it's a fraction of that. And it's worthwhile to make the investment. Certain areas of the country are now having people actually walking around the public with defibrillators on them, like backpacks. Seattle is trying this now. Seattle was one of the first communities that got CPR going 20 years ago because then you could save lives with CPR. And they trained the public here to do CPR. When that first was occurring, a lot of people felt the public shouldn't be treated to that knowledge. It was something the physicians alone should do. That people weren't capable of doing that. Of course, it was foolishness then, it's foolishness now. These new machines are really a technological marvel. When I started medical school, to defibrillate a patient was a major accomplishment. We'd start at 100 watts, everybody'd stand back and we'd shock the patient. You've seen this probably in movies and whatnot. It's pretty dramatic. The new machines are really foolproof. You can't shock someone in a way that would hurt them. The machine will not let you shock the patient if they're in the wrong kind of rhythm that might hurt them. It's truly a life-saving event, and one very easy to use. We gave the defibrillator to a fifth grade class one time, did not tell them what it was for except for saving lives, and asked the fifth graders to figure out how to use the machine, and they did it in about 10 minutes. So I think if we can train fifth graders in 10 minutes, we can probably train the public and we'll get a good deal less. From my point of view, again, this is an opportunity to show the public what needs to be done. These machines should be available at every public building in Oregon, not just the schools, in every school. It should be available at public events, especially sporting events where people are under stress and are more likely to have an event of this nature. They should be, I think, available to all police officers, and so they're available with them and they know how to use them. They should have one in every car. But this is just the first step, and I appreciate Representative Haas bringing this forward. I think it will publicize the need and maybe get us moving in the right direction finally. I don't expect this to revolutionize the state, but it's a step in the right direction. I hope you will pass favorably on the bill. And I'm glad to take any questions you might have, Madam Chair.
Well, Senator Bates, I think your point is well taken, as well as Representative Haas. I have a place over in Neskowin, a very small community north of Lincoln City, and the Neskowin Community Association is looking to buy two defibrillators to have available in our community because we have a lot of coastal visitors, and it's a long way to get some help to come in. And this is a community association that is willing to raise the funds and buy them, and I think that's really saying something to the community. And it's interesting. Why is it two sessions that you've tried this bill now? Is it because of funding? The funding issue each time?
Usually at the bottom line. It's amazing that since I've been going, I've gone to some conference on these, Madam Chair, and almost every one, someone will get up and he'll say, "Hi, my name is so-and-so, and 6 months ago I died. But because of one of these, I came back." All of the golf courses in Oregon. Nike's corporate headquarters. That happens. It has 22 of these. And the rest of the public starting to catch on, but I think we need to put them in schools, particularly gymnasiums and places where there's sporting events, swimming pools.
Mm-hmm. Senator Cruz?
Madam Chair, when we did it in state buildings, it was mandate, and we had no problem with that because that was the state telling the state what to do. I think with the permissive language you have put in here, it will, and hopefully with the testimony in committee in both the House and Senate, the department will get the message. And there are other funds out there, there are grants and other funds that they could aggressively seek. And I think the reason this has a chance for success, it's not dealing with the money they currently have, it's asking them to go out and find other resources. They have the personnel to do that, so it's not even an FTE hit on them. So I think this is crafted very well.
All right, thank you very much, and thank you again, Ms. Johnson. We hope we can do something special for your son.
Thank you.
I have one other person signed up to testify, Tim Phillips. Sir, welcome to the committee. State your name and where you're from, please.
My name is Tim Phillips, and I'm from Portland, Oregon.
Thank you.
Two reasons why I'm here. First, I'm here representing Flossin Magazine. I'm actually a writer for Flossin Magazine. And last week, I was talking over with one of the editors of the magazine about doing a story on Eddie. I'm also here on behalf of Eddie. I'm one of thousands of friends that Eddie has. And for me to just be here is enough. I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think Eddie has a part in everybody that's really easy to present to other people. So I think I could say some things about Eddie that other people would say the same exact thing about. So first, with that said, the magazine is it's a national magazine based out of Portland. And basically, I asked her if I could do a story on Eddie. Since I knew it was a national magazine, I knew it could go national. And it was really close to me. They said, yeah. The editor hooked me up with the number for Representative Hyas, and I called and got Elizabeth, his secretary, and she gave me a lot of information. And then a few days later, she called me back and let me know about this meeting. So the first thing I did was call Eddie's mom, let her know about this, because, like you said earlier, I think it was kind of like a blessing in the sky how this came about, and I felt... I mean, I didn't have a lot of time to work with it, but I really wanted to get it out. I really wanted to tell her about it, and I really wanted to come here and speak about it. So first, Eddie, I met Eddie through his mom at PCC. I was a student there. She worked in the gym. He used to come in all the time after school, every day after school. We'd be there. Sometimes we'd be there waiting for him. Sometimes he'd be there waiting for us. And, you know, you build a relationship with a kid 5 days a week, and you grow real close to him. For me, over the last 3-4 years, I haven't really been around, so I haven't seen him that much. So every time he came around, it was like, it was automatic for me to treat him like a little brother. That's how I felt. Me and my brother and another guy named Tommy, just like my brother, that's how all of us felt. And there are other people that felt the same exact way, and thousands of them, I promise you. And just the way that he touched us, you know. When I found out, I mean, there's not a day that hasn't passed since he died that I can't think about him. And I mean, last day I seen him was last summer, and I played in a basketball tournament, and we used to play basketball with him every day. He really loved the game of basketball. I can't explain to you how much he loved basketball. I also knew about his heart condition back in the day, and I knew how much it hurt him not to play. So for him to play, and when he came up to me last summer and said, I'm playing, come to my game, and I promised him I was going to be there. And the whole season, I mean, he went to my high school the first couple of years. I went to Jeff, then he transferred to Grant, and he told me, I was like, all right, Eddie, I'm going to come to your game. I promised him, you know. And what happened, and I didn't go to one of his games. And I've done some things in my past that, you know, was wrong, but, you know, I'm the kind of person that lives with no regrets, and that honestly, is one of the biggest regrets I'll ever have, is not going to see him play one basketball game. I mean, I've always watched him play basketball, but I didn't see him play in one basketball game. So for me to be here and for me to do this for his family and for myself is big. And I just really want to come here and represent the magazine and say that the magazine is fully behind this. I'm fully behind this. And I can do whatever I can do to help possible. I don't think there's too much I could say as far as stats go. I think you pretty much know what we're dealing with. But just to let everybody know that Eddie's always going to be remembered by thousands of people in Portland. And whatever most people can do, they'll do for him. That's the kind of person he was. He'd do it for us. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Do you want to hang on just one second? Do any members of the committee have any questions? No, but thank you very much. And I know Eddie was listening. I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. I'm going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 515, and then I'm going to open a work session. And Senator Starr, I bet you have a motion for me.
You know, I don't have a copy of the amendments.
Oops. Oh, there you go. Could you explain the amendment again, Ms. Taylor?
Not a problem. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the -1 amendment, again, makes the program permissive, and it requires the Department of Ed to use available resources to seek those federal grant funds.
Sounds like a reasonable amendment. Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 515.
Senator Starr moves the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 515. Any discussion? Okay, any objection? Hearing none, the amendments are approved. Senator Starr, do you have another motion for me?
Yes. Is this going to the floor or to Ways and Means?
Floor.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 515 as amended to the Senate floor with the DuPage recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 515 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a DuPass recommendation. Any discussion? Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, I've studied these machines back when we put them in the state buildings. They are definitely life-saving machines. I want to thank Senator Bate and Representative Haas for the bill and for the amendments that are going to get this through the process. Thank you both very much.
Any other comments? Okay, I would ask then if there's any objection to Senate Bill 515 as amended. There, hearing none, this bill will be passed. We'll go to the floor of the Senate. Senator Bates, would you carry that, please? And I am very pleased that we can honor Eddie Barnett and his mother, Christine Johnson, in this way. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing and thank all our guests for coming. We are now going to our next bill, which coincidentally enough has to do with sports. And I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 6. And Ms. Taylor, would you tell us what that's about?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 6 prohibits school administrative teachers, employees, and volunteers from promoting, suggesting, or supplying performance-enhancing supplements to students. Those administrators, teachers, employees, and volunteers may treat their own children, and they may also do this for certain non-school-related activities. The punishment is violation with a maximum imprisonment of 3 months, $500 fine, or both, and this does have an emergency clause.
Okay, we have two very esteemed gentlemen to testify, Senator Bates and Senate President Peter Courtney. Come on up, guys.
Chair, I have that stamp document,
please. Yes, we can bring him up at the same time. We can do three of you. Okay, Mr. President.
Thank you, Chair Walker, Vice Chair Starr, and Senator Cruz, Senator Morissette, and members of the Senate Education and Workforce Committee, as well as the High and Learned Committee Administrator Marjorie Taylor. You have before you, I believe, a copy of my testimony, and it has been my history. I will not read extensively from it, rather I will pick bits and pieces from it. I am Peter Courtney, a state senator from District 11. which includes portions of Salem, includes all of Jervis and Woodburn. I'm here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 6, which has just been explained to you by Committee Administrator Taylor. Senate Bill 6 was introduced at the request of OSAA, the Oregon Student Athletic Association, excuse me, Activities Association. I make that mistake a lot. By Mr. Tom Walter, who is the Executive Director, and Mr. Brad Garrett, the Assistant Executive Director. I don't believe they're going to be here tonight, but they asked me to introduce this particular piece of legislation. It is simple. It says that no adult connected with our public schools, whether as a teacher, a coach, an administrator, or a volunteer, should be pressuring student-athletes to take performance-enhancing supplements. I have been around sports for most of my life. I think that healthy competition is a very viable part of being a student and of growing up. Competition, however, can become unhealthy when winning becomes an obsession. Not all the messages that we send as society are good. Parents and coaches can be overzealous. In all, I think the pressure to succeed in sports can sometimes be too great. Performance supplements seems to have become a phenomenon in only a relatively short period of time. Each year brings new revelations about the use of steroids and other supplements by prominent athletes. As I said there, even I speak to you, and I didn't plan it this way, starting last week, the United States Congress is taking testimony regarding what's been going on in Major League Baseball. But let me illustrate something. Just how willing some student athletes are willing to go to tinker with their bodies in order to succeed. A well-known survey was conducted in 1995 by Bob Goldman, a Chicago doctor. This was reported in Sports Illustrated magazine. Dr. Goldman asked 198 American Olympic caliber athletes whether they would be able to take, would they be willing to take advanced substances if they could be guaranteed that they would win a gold medal and would not be caught. 195 said they would. Dr. Goldman then changed the question. Would the athlete still take the drug if it meant that the athlete would win every competition for the next 5 years and would not be caught, but would then die from the drug's side effects? More than half said they would still take the drug.
Mm-hmm. Remember the study.
In a survey conducted by Mayo Clinic in 1999, 8.2% of teenage athletes reported that they used creatine, a muscle-building supplement. This included male and female students athletes as young as 14. The Mayo Clinic also reported that 5% to 11% of high school boys and 0.5% to 2.5% of high school girls have tried steroids. These substances can be very dangerous for young, growing bodies. Others who are here this evening, I believe, can testify on the dangerous impact it has about the effects of these drugs, about these particular supplements. There may not be much that we can do to prevent the use of supplements by a student who's determined to use them. But Senate Bill 6 will at least prevent such use from being instigated by some of the major authority figures in a student's life, the coaches, the teachers, the students, and school volunteers. It is a common sense piece of legislation, and I urge your support, and I thank you very much for allowing me to come and testify for Senate Bill 6. And with that, Chair Walker, I'm joined by Dr. Thad Stanford, as well as Dr. Alan Bates, who perhaps wish to speak at different portions of this, is also give their viewpoints on the importance, I believe, of Senate Bill 6.
Okay. Go ahead. We'll wait until you're all done, and then we'll ask questions.
My name is Thad Stanford. I'm an orthopedic surgeon here in Salem, Oregon, and I appreciate very much to being here, Senator Walker, and the rest of the committee. I think probably the reason I'm here is that I do chair the medical aspect of sports committee for the OSAA, OMA organizations, and I have for some years. Also, from 1996 to 2004, I served on the Sports Medicine Advisory Committee of the National Federation of State High School Associations, and for the last 4 years, chaired that committee. The National Federation is based in Indianapolis, actually rents space from the NCAA. It is an organization of the 51 state federations, including OSAA. It encompasses some 18,000 high schools and 7 million student athletes, whereas the NCAA has some 360,000. So they have a big job. And I want to start briefly, you've got your packet, I want to start briefly at 5-1, which is a supplement article, and just one of the few areas I'm going to read, but this sets the tone for where the problem began. The origin of the second paragraph, the origin of the dramatic surge in the sales of dietary supplements was the passage of the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act in 1994. This act defined dietary supplements, but it had turned out left loopholes that have played a significant role in making the public vulnerable to misleading claims. According to DSHEA, a dietary supplement may contain, and it goes on there. The second paragraph after that talks about it being self-industry regulated, and that has not turned out to be the case. Basically, this is where it began, that the FDA has no control over these substances, and so they cannot determine what's in them, and they cannot act on them unless they receive complaints. So that resulted in so many problems coming up, and on page one is the first, and on page two is the second position statement created by the National Federation of State High School Associations, and it reads pretty well, and it basically says that kids shouldn't be using these things if at all possible. The second one even talks about drinks, and I do think that the sports drinks, many of them are laced with not just carbos, but there's one that may have as much as 6 to 8 cups of coffee of caffeine in it. If you look at the label, it just says caffeine. It doesn't say how much. They don't have to do this.
Could you hold on just a moment, Dr. Stanford?
Are you talking about these drinks that you can just buy off the shelf?
So yeah, you usually can buy them at the gas station where you go in and buy groceries. They are being... I have a school principal friend in Portland who was detailed by these folks. They're trying to dump them off. And we had a discussion on our committee in Indianapolis. Some people said it was 6 cups. Some people said it was 8 cups. I'm no expert on it, but that seems to be the
that's shocking. I didn't know that.
And there are other stimulants in many of these drinks. There are some good drinks, and this is what it's all about, trying to determine what's good and what isn't.
All right.
So the position statements were there for a very good reason. Number three, and it's a long article, and I'm not going to go into it very detailed. There's a few things about it. It says in here that physicians, and I'm sure Senator Bates would agree right off the bat, physicians look at something like this and say, you know, until we're sure it's safe, we don't want people to use it. Athletes say, you show me that it's unsafe or I'm going to use it. That's what happened a long time ago when steroids started. On the bottom is a very important thing, because it says no author or related institution has received any financial benefit from research in this study. Unfortunately, more and more studies that we read are being funded by drug manufacturers. And there have been some good articles about how they have been influenced, and that's very sad. But it is true. Now, this study, which came out of what I consider to be a really good institution, the University of Michigan, having gone there, was also part of the, and I'm directing you now to number 6, it has to do with CAM, which is Complementary and Alternative Medicine. And this is from the Academy of Orthopedic Surgery Bulletin. And these are the people, and this is where this study came from, from Ann Arbor. These are the people who are saying, okay, let's find out, let's not have alternative medicines. Let's find out if they are good and usable and what they do and what they don't do, and let's, or if they don't do it or if they're harmful, let's not call them medicines. And let's be able to label whatever it is. Let's get the FDA back in it. On number 4 is a fairly significant indictment of some commonly used herb supplements with potential hazards. And you'll see some fairly common ones there, and you'll see a lot of potential hazards and interactions with other medicines and with with anesthetics, and there have been some deaths because the medical profession didn't pick up on this right off the bat. And now if you're going to go have a surgery, even a local, under local, they will tell you, get off supplements, get off them 14 days ahead of time. Because nowadays, even now, if you ask somebody, are you on any medicines, they'll tell you, yes, thyroid, Lipitor. Well, are you on any supplements? Oh, patients still do not consider these things medicines. And they're just totally unaware. And I'll talk briefly about the advertising. The advertising is driving both the prescription and this area of medicine over the top. People are demanding those things that have been advertised, and there's a book, new book out by a family practitioner from Harvard called The Overdosing of America, and it's very good, and it talks about this in great detail. To go on further then, I just have a few informational. On number 7, you'll see it says the top 5. This has to do with what can happen. These are the designer and club drugs, and they're just full of all stuff you cannot believe, and of course nobody is paying attention to what's in them because the FDA is not allowed to unless complained to, and some of the clubs will sell you stuff that it's terribly hard to even believe. Number 8 is a Kansas City Star, and I bring this out because it talks about 10-year-old kids using steroids, which is staggering. It brings up the point as to whether or not this bill should include youth sports, because there are tons of kids in youth sports. I hate to use the term little league because I don't want to denigrate them any more than anybody else, and they're probably cleaner than most. But the point is that we have kids being advised to use creatine. 10-year-old kids, coach says, get some creatine. You can still buy creatine over the counter. The FDA stopped ephedra when it killed a lot of people, including the young pitcher from Medford. The FDA only recently stopped androsterone on January 1 of this year. That was the one that Mark McGuire took with creatine. They only recently stopped that. So there are many things still going over the counter that are dangerous, and the kids are taking them, and their youth coaches are advising it. Now again, I'm not a coach basher. I love them. I've been with them all my life, and most of them are great, great people. But as Senator Courtney said, they have incredible influence over kids, and now their parents, because their parents assume they will go on to the NBA. And the NCAA has wonderful statistics, including one which says that 1 out of 3,400 senior basketball players in high school will be drafted in the NBA. That's drafted. 1 out of 3,400. And yet, they all seem to think that's where they're going. A little bit on number 9, the bottom, it just shows how a company changed some of the chemical radicals in one of their banned substances and sold it. And I only have just a little bit more. The one, number 10, has to do with testing, and we don't get into testing much because it's so expensive and we really can't do it, but the NCAA does, and so these kids are taking some supplements that are not even banned, but they're messing up their tests, and so they're being told not to do that. The other one, number 11, is strictly informational. One thing I did want to do is just go back to number 5-3, because at the very end it does say what schools should be doing in districts, the policies addressing the use of supplements by coaching, banning the sale by school personnel, etc. Very, very close to what we're talking about today. And on the last page, it shows that now the medical malpractice people have gotten into it, and we have a risk management tip as early as 3 years ago about herbals and some of the adverse effects and problems with purity and efficacy. When the doctors start being made aware of this and then they still use them, they're again more liable to be negligent themselves. And that ends what I have to say about this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Stanford. We'll hear from Senator Bates, and we'll have some questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Alan Bates, State Senator from the Medford-Ashland area, family physician for the last 25 years. And I was asked to testify and take part in this bill. I'm glad to do so. I'm going to speak from a point of view of my experience as a family physician and as a school board member for over 10 years in a moderate-sized school district of about 5,000 kids. It's first off, for me, very sad that we even need this legislation. It's sort of a mark of our society that we're even having the discussion that it has to come to this level of attention and be treated in this way. The need for people to win at athletic events at all costs has reached a level in our society which is truly unbelievable, and the pressure on coaches, especially at the junior high and high school level, to win is unbelievable. I've shared that frustration with those coaches and tried to calm them at times and watch them screaming at athletes and getting overly involved in these episodes. It goes for other events in which young people are involved in sports also. I believe that's what's driving this. We're not going to be able to change that, but this bill at least will make people aware this is inappropriate behavior. Most of the coaches I know are good people. They would never think of trying to influence an athlete to take any drugs or medications or bodybuilding steroids, but it does happen. My personal experience in the Southern Oregon area, I, as a family physician, have had students come to me from all the schools in that area. Up to 4 or 5 years ago, I would have about one student a year come in and talk to me about getting steroids from off the street, taking injection of those steroids to build body mass. Commonly was being asked if they could use creatine to try to build body mass, take anabolic steroids, take pseudoephedrine to increase their activity during their time when they're actually competing, taking drugs like Ginkgo Biloba and others, some of which, unfortunately, I think were suggested by their coaches, and it was very inappropriate that happened. What I'm hoping this bill will do is send a very clear message to coaches and other people who work with young athletes. This is inappropriate behavior. Not only should they not be telling them to use this and not encouraging them to use it, but they should be setting an example not to use these drugs. We've just heard a few moments ago about the death of an athlete. I personally am concerned that some of the deaths we've seen in athletes are a result of some of these substances being in their systems during times of high stress. There usually is an underlying physical condition, but I think this just pushes it over the edge sometimes. You've had good testimony from the gentleman on my left and on my right here. I think I can offer a little more than what they've said. It's just, to me, a sad commentary on our society that we have to do this. I'm glad that this bill is going hopefully forward today, and that will send a very clear message to our youth and to our coaches about what's appropriate behavior. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Some of the things, Dr. And, and thank you for the information. It's incredible information. Some of it very shocking. And I'm wondering, when I start getting a cold, somebody told me years ago, take zinc and echinacea, and they will kind of knock the front end off of it. So I hope I'm not, I haven't violated anything by doing that. But that's like once a year.
Well, I'm taking echinacea and golden seal right now to keep my cold away.
Yeah, these are home remedy things, yeah.
The problem is that you don't get the warning that you might with other medicines.
Right.
All medicines can cause trouble.
I was looking at what you have under echinacea there, and I only have an upset stomach when I'm in this building, so most of the time I'm fine. I guess to the sponsor and signers of the bill. Especially, Senator Courtney, you talked about the hearings Congress is doing, and what we found in that is basically Major League Baseball is doing nothing. And, they've got a slap on the wrist sort of thing going, and Congress is saying, especially in professional sports, lifetime ban if you're caught. They have it for gambling. Why not for performance-enhancing drugs? The Olympic standard is pretty high, and baseball should be able to rise to that. But one of the things, I was listening to talk shows on the subject, and they were talking about it for kids, it's not just the athletes. It's other kids who want to look good. You know, they may not be involved in sports. They just want to look good. So it's somewhat more invasive than just in the sports spectrum here. And clearly a strong signal needs to be sent. I don't know how you get at that, but I was wondering, you know, if this is known that this is out here, I'm wondering if the penalty is strong enough. I mean, for somebody in school to be, I mean, this is child abuse, for God's sakes. I'm wondering if the penalty is strong enough for somebody in the school system. I don't know how we get at the kids at this point in time, except change the cultural way we look at things. But I'm wondering if the penalties are strong enough for what we're doing here. If we really want to be sending a strong message, if it should be a little heavier.
Chair Walker, Senator Cruz, I think if the bill passes out and passes this legislature and is signed by the governor, I think the penalty is strong enough in the beginning. Because if you were to announce on the speakers in a high school that there is a new law in the state of Oregon that you can go to jail for being encouraging student-athletes to take performance-enhancing supplements, I think that would stun both individuals who deal with them to make sure they didn't do that. Now, as time wears on and they become aware of the penalties, it may not be stiff enough. But I think initially it would be a real shock. It would be a stunner, and it would stun parents, teachers, administrators, and coaches. I really do believe that.
Madam Chair.
That's my response. In terms of that.
Senator Morissette.
Thank you. Well, having taught high school for a number of years and seeing parents who are really excited about their kids turning pro someday, and hearing that their scouts are now looking at middle school kids because they're already graduating NBA stars from high school, you know, the NBA or two or three of them who are all-stars. So I think there's a real, real danger that has to be addressed by the schools, by the coaches, by the parents about who's hanging around the gyms. There was one incident in our area by a professional, former professional football player who was coaching at a high school and selling his kids' stuff. And he was a former pro. That was stopped. But it is pervasive, and I think that we need to aim this also at Little League, the little kids who are... And parents see dollar signs in these kids. I've run into a number of parents who saw dollar signs and want their kid to be...
I'd like to comment on that. There was a case, and I'm still in touch a lot with people in Indianapolis, and I just got reported a case out of someplace back in the Midwest where a father of an 8-year-old boy on a weekend club wrestling thing wanted him to lose 3 pounds, gave him something, not sure what, put him in a hot room, and put him on a treadmill, and that little 8-year-old boy died. And that's that's how anecdotal, but that's how intense they can be.
Madam Chair, could I respond to Senator Cruz also?
Sure.
I'm not sure the penalties are strong enough or not, but I think it's a good start, and I would start there. I think this problem is a lot more pervasive than we think it is. What I've heard in my practice is I think the tip of the iceberg, but a lot more goes on than we think it does. And one of the things that happens in these situations that I've kind of watched is that people kind of look the other way. You'll see a kid go from, you know, 150 pounds to 180 pounds in 12 months, and he's beefed up all of a sudden, and nobody asks, how did anybody do that? And maybe the coach didn't do it, the assistant coach didn't do it, but maybe one of the volunteers did, or the kid got something off the street. The cases I'm most concerned about where the boys were shooting steroids for football teams, they had a supplier that was on the street. But people had to be asking how this one team suddenly was gaining so much weight and gaining so much muscle mass out of kids that are 15, 16, and 17 years old. And when the boy walked to my office, I hadn't seen him for a year. I was stunned that it changed. He was 5'10" and 210 pounds. It was all solid. And I don't see any way you can do that bucking hay. So this kid had been on steroids, and he told me he was. And we had to go back after those people. It's an ugly situation, and that's the extreme. And a lot of it goes on. It's a lot more subtle. Kids taking ginkgo biloba, you don't know how much you're getting, and it's got a pseudoephedrine effect, ephedrine-like effect, and you can really get kids in trouble with that stuff. Blood pressure goes up, heart rates go up. Kids really get jacked up on it. It's not good for them.
I would like to make a comment here, and then I'll get to you, Senator Cruz. Senator Morissette made reference to a local case, and I have all the newspaper articles from 2003. I thought it was just 2004, but it started in November of 2003. Chris Miller, a former quarterback at the University of Oregon and a 10-year NFL career. He is a coach at South Eugene High School in their football program, or at least he was. I don't know if he's still there, in 2002. And he has a company, a bodybuilding supplements is the name of the company, or BBS, and they manufacture dietary supplements including Indo-Cre-3, which is creatine, a form of creatine. He also owns part of a retail outlet, C-Mill Smoothies, in downtown Eugene that sells the products. Well, it came as a surprise to the school district to find out that he was selling those products to 12 of the 18 members of the team. And the school district was unaware that this was going on. And Dr. Stanford, you mentioned the national organization you're part of. Let's see if I can find that. In their 1988 discussion, they said that they didn't, in a 1998 policy statement, the Federation, National Federation of State High School Associations, put out their recommendation that you not give these kids supplements. And then Jerry Deal, assistant director of that national group at the time, said a coach selling supplements to his players represents, quote, a real conflict of interest, unquote, because kids look up to their coaches. So the Eugene School District Board took this issue up, and I believe they, Senator Morissette, am I correct that they no longer allow those supplements to be promoted?
But pardon?
What? Can you come down here?
They said that he could not continue to use the supplements.
Right.
But I don't know what happened to the
coach. Okay. So I had contacted the school district, but no one was around to find out exactly what they did. But that raised a number of questions in people's minds. The students, the parents, were some of them just totally bought into this. And Coach Miller said at the beginning of every season, he brings the parents in and tells them about all the supplements and all of these things. But here you have a coach, someone who was an NFL star, University of Oregon star, and I don't think that it's objective. I think they look to this coach and, yeah, coach, you know, you're like my dad. You tell me what's right. And I think you've shown us today that there are a lot of concerns about these things. Even the common over-the-counter, I mean, this is over-the-counter, but Echinacea and Golden Seal. I've been taking it since Saturday because I haven't felt well. Actually, I'm feeling better, but, you know, is that mental? Am I overdosing? I don't know.
I'll tell you in a minute.
You'll tell me in a minute.
The Register Guard article got back to the National Federation before I ever saw it. That's how quickly they found out about it. The other question that I didn't bring up, but school districts, many of them have a rule about if a child is going to take a medication or anything in the school building, aspirin, they have to take it to the school nurse or some administrator. You get out to the playing field, and apparently that rule, you'd think it would still hold, but apparently it doesn't.
That's an interesting point, Doctor, because I've never heard that analogy made before, and you're exactly right. Teachers cannot administer, any school employee cannot administer medication without written permission from the parents, and, you know, they have to go to the office, and it's a pretty big deal. But this apparently is not a big deal. Anyway, do you have any other comments you want to make, Senator Courtney? You work with these athletes. You see these kids.
Chair Walker, you really don't want to get me started on youth sports or coaching, because I have very strong views on this whole area, and as a result of some of my experiences of being a coach and also my view of what sports has become in our society. So I'll just defer and say that I'm very pleased, that I was honored that the Oregon Student Activities Association would ask me to introduce this bill, and that I do think that it has merit and is appropriate and timely, and I'm very grateful that you were willing to hold a public hearing on Senate Bill 6.
Senator Cruz now has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess next time I go to the gym, I'm going to look in that. They've got this big container full of supplements, and I'm going to have to look and see what in the world's in there, because I never pay attention to it. And you know, I was a small child, and I grew, and I worked hard to get big enough to play football, and certainly, I don't think any of that stuff existed back then, but I certainly didn't know about it. President Courtney, I'm going to accept on your wisdom that this is a very good start, and I think it is, but I guess some things that for the future that we need to look at, you know, for child abuse, we have mandatory reporters. And for a coach or a trainer who is with these kids on a regular basis year after year, and I mean, when a child goes heavy into this sort of activity, the results are pretty dramatic and pretty beyond normal. And so that's one area we might want to look at is at what level do not just the fact that they aren't advocating it or providing it, but at what point if a coach is seeing this sort of activity happening, does he need to become a whistleblower? And because this isn't going to stop parents from getting their kids into these things. This isn't going to stop kids from picking them up on the streets. So good first step, but I think we need to really do some serious thinking in the next couple of years and see what the next step should be to try to combat this growing plague on. And you're right, I love sports. You know, I still love sports. I grew up playing them, and this is an insult to sports. And I like the purity of it, and I would like to see us as a society get back there. So we need to really think about what comes next and how we get the right people involved in the conversation, because this is the tip of the iceberg. It's a good first step, like you said, but we need to probably be aggressive in the future as we try to do something about this problem.
Okay, any other
questions? Could I make one comment?
Sure.
Because you brought up what the basic of all of these, we teach these kids to, if they want to be better, to practice, to get shape, to work out, to do things that you do to get better. We don't teach them to take a pill to get better. If we teach them to take a pill to get bigger and better, the next thing they may not be so happy, or they may be sleepy and they want to take something to wake up more, or they may it segues right into taking pills to solve other problems. It is one of my big arguments, but you're absolutely correct. You work hard and you learn. Thank you.
It's interesting that you guys all think the fine and the punishment ought to be greater. I was going to ask you why it was so stiff. So I guess it's all a matter of perception. Yeah. Okay, if there's no other comments or questions, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 6, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 6. Senator Starr?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 6 to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 6 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Good first step, I assume, by everyone. Okay. Hearing no objection, Senate Bill 6 is passed, is going to the floor of the Senate, and our two gentlemen walked out. I will have Senator...
Let the doctor carry the bill.
He can't do that. I'm going to have Senator Courtney carry this bill.
Yes, that's...
He would be great.
His bill.
All right, gentlemen, we are done early. I appreciate your service tonight. Thank you. Thank you very much. We are going to adjourn.
Thank you.